Did you know that gladiators rarely died in battle? That daylight savings time was originally intended for bug collecting? And that the man who created the Headless Horseman also invented Santa Claus? Learn the truth behind these and much more in my new book, Facts That Aren't True. Link in the description.
You want to go on science? I'm cool with science. I love science.
I kind of doubt it.
All right. So,
well, science is knowledge, right?
Science is a methodological system of inquiry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want to go through that method of inquiry with me?
I think you probably have a pretty good general sense of what the scientific method is.
Yeah, but we have an audience, right? Do we care what the audience wants to hear? Or is this just, I should already know it, so we should just agree on everything about science without letting the audience know what we actually think about science and the scientific method?
Well, last time we talked, we didn't get to talk about much because your audio was breaking up too much, but you just very much disagree with evolution, and I think for terrible reasons.
Well, yeah, you think. Yeah, that's okay. I'm okay with what you think.
Okay, I wanted
to talk about science and the scientific method. I love science and the scientific method. Even though you say I don't, but I do. So
then why do you reject mainstream science?
What do you mean I reject mainstream science?
Do you think the Earth is billions of years old?
No.
Do you think the universe is billions of years old?
Let me answer.
Well, we got three no's. So you've shot down the entire field of biology, the entire field of astronomy, and an extraordinarily significant part of the field of geology. We're running out of sciences.
Mainstream.
So I think you used
the term mainstream, okay? So I don't have to follow the mainstream to understand science and the scientific method and what they say about evolution. It sounds convoluted to me, but we can get into that if you like.
I would like nothing more.
Right?
So, here's my happy face.
So if we were to start at the beginning, you have the Big Bang, I have God spoke.
I have evidence,
so who,
you do not. Yeah.
Okay, you have evidence.
Yep, and you do not.
Evidence is cool, but when I give evidence, it's dismissed. When you give evidence, it's dismissed.
Go ahead and give
right?
the evidence is, that no, no. God spoke.
So we're both, maybe you missed the part where we're both going to give evidence and reject each other's evidence, right?
Well, that's actually not going to happen because you aren't going to give evidence. And I can prove that right now. Give the evidence that God spoke.
So I started this by telling you I am a Bible believer. So when I read the Bible and believe what it says in the beginning, God said, let there be light. And there was light. You don't believe that. So you're not going to accept that. Right?
I asked you for evidence.
That's my evidence. For me, that is evidence to me.
Okay,
You don't have to accept it, right? So now you, in turn, are going to give me
It's just literally
your
not
evidence.
Evidence.
Again, you're going to... So give me your evidence, and we'll go through it. I gave you my evidence that you didn't accept, which is okay.
You didn't give any evidence.
Carry on.
So literally everywhere we look, the distant galaxies are redshifted. Do you simply disagree with this? Genesis agrees with this.
No, I didn't disagree with that. You just said it, right? You said something about redshift.
I'm telling you about science.
I haven't read the Bible of redshift, so I don't know anything about redshift. If this is your evidence, you have to explain it to me. I gave you my evidence.
Everywhere in the universe we look, the distant galaxies, their light is more red than you would expect. It is a Doppler shift.
Why would you... you're saying then we expect. What led you to expect a certain red?
What led me to expect a certain red?
Yeah, because you're saying
know.
Red shifted, right?
Yeah. Astronomers have known for really... Like, we've been able to do this for 100 years at this point. So astronomers, by looking at galaxies, can tell what kind of star composition they have, and then therefore... So what the spectrum of light coming from them would be. And it's always redshifted. Now, what you can say is, well, but you don't know what color it's supposed to be. That's kind of fair.
How would you know what color it's supposed to be?
Yeah, Rob, I'm explaining. It actually doesn't really...
I'm sorry, I'm listening.
It doesn't actually really matter because when we look at the galaxies, the farther away they are, the more toward the red end of the spectrum their light is. So it's called the Hubble-Lemaitre law. The implication for that is that they're moving away, and that's more of specifically what the Hubble-Lemaitre law is describing. But we can say that, look, we can't say what the color of any of the galaxy light should be, but it's absolutely the case that no matter where we look, the farther away they are, the more redshifted they are. So it doesn't matter what the arbitrary, this is what they should be line is, we still see the pattern.
Just from looking up.
I wouldn't say up, but we look in all directions at galaxies everywhere.
Okay, well, as far as I'm concerned, the sky is only up.
You think the Earth is flat?
Well, look, I could show you my camera right now, bro. Can I put my camera on for a second?
Yeah.
You see up over there? Those are fucking mountains. Right?
They're fucking mountains?
Are those flat mountains? Are those flat mountains?
I kind of doubt it.
Right.
I don't know what any word means to you,
myself,
though.
What I call myself is I call myself a not flat, flat earther. That's what I call myself because you all like to label me as a flat earther. So I'm okay with that, but the Earth's not flat. I live in southern British Columbia where I'm surrounded on one side by mountains and valleys. Other side, I have Pacific Ocean. Right? So, the Pacific Ocean, I don't consider a spherical object. So fine, call me a flat earther.
Well, you think the Earth is
flat.
Did I lose you guys? So, yeah. Macroscopically, you think the Earth is flat. So.
Okay. Sure. I accept the label of flat earther, but I change it to not flat, flat earther, because I live surrounded by mountains. So no, the Earth, it ain't flat. But I do know that if you go out and buy a water level, the tool, and understand how it works, what's the range on the straight line created by the water level?
Four.
Four?
Yeah.
For what?
You didn't know that? Water levels don't have water levels don't have units.
Well, whatever you hash mark on the vial, yeah, could be a measurement. Right? But the fact that the law of communicating vessels says that each end of the two points of the water level will be at the same elevation.
Yep. And when you look down a water level at things off in the distance that are higher up than you are, they appear below the water level, which is only possible if the surface of the earth is curving away from you.
No. I don't care about the surface of earth. I care about the horizontal plane created by the water level.
Yeah, which will point above things that are higher in elevation than you off in the distance, which isn't possible if the earth is flat.
You know how to read a water level, right? You got to be right up against it. And you got to read the little hash mark with the water inside.
Wow.
Yeah, but you're saying you look like 100 meters, 200 meters, 300 meters away at it and it looks lower?
No, you'd be looking a lot farther away than that.
Well, how much earth curve do you think there is in 400 meters?
In 400 meters? A negligible amount.
How much? I can give you the numbers if you want.
A negligible amount.
Okay, here. 8 inches per mile squared. Do you hold to that?
No.
Okay, what's your curvature calculation, sir?
I don't have one.
So you're a flat earther?
No.
Well, I'm confused. How do you know the earth's a sphere?
Because the night sky rotates in two different directions, which is literally impossible if the earth is flat.
No, it's not. How do you know how that sky was created?
I know that it wasn't created.
Well, you just think it's all here by accident.
No, the laws of physics are not accidents.
Right.
Yep.
I don't think so either.
Great.
We might agree on more than you think.
No.
No.
No. So why do you believe that evolution is not true?
Why do I believe that evolution is not true? Well, let's break that down. We're going to start with the first word you used was believe.
First word I used was why.
Okay. Why do you believe? Okay. Your first question was, why do you believe? I'm sorry.
I asked a singular question.
With my words. Why do I believe that evolution is not true? Is your complete statement, right? Your question?
Oh, chat. What is it doing?
Why do I believe evolution is not true? I just want to make sure we're on the same page here.
Go on.
We need to understand that we both have beliefs, right? I can believe something is true. That doesn't mean I'm lying about it. I don't think you're lying about your beliefs. The evidence that you've accepted for your beliefs is not the same evidence that I would accept for my beliefs. Right? Like, because when I said I read the Bible and I believe the Bible, when the Bible says something and I believe it, you won't believe what I believe. Because I just read something in a book made by men. But all of your evolutional theory is stuff based on what men did.
Yeah, so the question was, why don't you believe in evolution?
Because I have not accepted the evidence for evolution.
Are you aware of the
evidence? If you would like to present me with some new evidence for your evolution, because I don't even think we agree on the definition of evolution, which we haven't got to yet. We're still working on belief.
If evolution was true, what would the evidence look like?
All right. How about we both need to agree on what evolution is?
If evolution was true, what would the evidence look like?
What is evolution, please?
Do you not know? Or why are you asking me this?
No, don't. Come on, Planet Peterson. I'm trying to have a civilized discussion. I'm trying. when I ask a question, don't be a jerk about it. Just answer the question or don't answer the question.
The species alive today are the descendants of different species of the past.
So it's one species turning into a new species.
It can become, well, its progenitors can become multiple different species, actually. But one species never magically turns into another species.
Well, isn't that what we need to...
No, that's Pokemon.
To have No, I'm not... I'm trying to understand your...
Okay, now
evolution.
That we both know what I mean by evolution, if evolution was true, what would the evidence look like?
Well, yeah, you're saying it's one species turning into a new species.
If evolution was true, what would the evidence look like?
It can become new species. It can be... One species can actually turn into... multiple different new species.
Rob, the question is, if evolution was true, what would the evidence look like?
Well, you're saying evolution is true. Can you provide me that evidence?
I'm going to make admit what the evidence is, and then you're going to have to live with the fact that that evidence exists.
All right. So
if evolution was true... what would the evidence look like?
A paternity test is your evidence for evolution.
No.
Is that where you're going?
Nope.
Well, because you said shared genes, right? So how do you how do you know you share genes with your parents? You get a paternity test. You and your parents share genes. Therefore, evolution.
One organism having offspring isn't... I mean, it technically is evolution in a very... limited sense, but you don't do a paternity test with a member of a different species alive today. So you actually already know what the evidence would be if evolution was true.
Ahead.
Now I need you to say it out loud. I need
I don't know what kind of game you're trying to play here, but I'm trying to have a conversation about this. Well,
yep.
It sounds like
and the
you're just
only thing that's going to happen at this point in the conversation is you're going to say out loud what the evidence would be if evolution was true.
Okay. I don't know.
No, you do know because
you're
I explained it earlier. And you were here for it because you remember specific details from it. Now, I need you to confess what the evidence of evolution would be.
Shared genes?
Do all organisms on the planet share genes?
Yeah, I remember hearing something
about this
conversation.
There we go. So, according to Rob, we do have the evidence of evolution. According to you, the evidence of evolution we have. Ladies and gentlemen,
right?
We've got
and all we need is a few billion years for one thing to turn into another thing that turned into another thing.
Luckily, we know without a shadow of a doubt that that happened. Yep.
How?
We can see billions of light years. Radiometric dating confirms it as well.
Radiometric dating. I'm going to have to look into radiometric dating before I... concede to radiometric dating proves evolution.
It doesn't prove evolution.
Or is good evidence of evolution that you accepted?
It's extremely good evidence because evolution could have been falsified by radiometric dating, but it wasn't.
Again, I don't know about radiometric dating, so I'm...
Yeah, Rob, what you don't know could fill a book. It could fill a universe.
I understand that. That's cool that you're going to start this way, but whatever. I'm sure I've dished out some myself.
Yeah. Remember when you admitted that we have the evidence of evolution?
Sure.
Yeah,
that's
great.
What was that?
You're the one that
I
said
guess
it.
You get the win here, bro. Like, all
yep.
right.
According to Rob, we have the evidence of evolution.
Okay. What does that do for our conversation?
I want to ask it ends some, clarifying, it. Some clarifying questions here.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Planet Peterson. I'll just go on mute then. You are the winner.
Well, so my understanding of the evolutionary evidence is that we have an allowance for things to change, but only within, but they still remain within a clade. Is that the correct terminology?
That's a true sort of like, how do I want to put it? That's kind of a, like a law of evolution. Yeah.
So the idea is that the example that we talked about before, you not me and you, but me and another person who is going through this, was the progenitor of the whale is supposed to be like some kind of four-legged land creature.
Right? Yeah.
Something that absolutely does not look like a whale.
Yep. And we've got examples of those.
Okay. We have examples of those. But it still maintains some kind of whaleness.
Yep.
Okay. So the question, I guess the question that I have at that point is, at what time or through what mechanism do we ever see things change from, you know, whatever they're, do we ever, because we know that prokaryotes and eukaryotes split at some point.
Well, they didn't split. Prokaryotes evolved into eukaryotes. And that's one of the only examples we ever have in the history of life on Earth where one kind of organism really does suddenly become another kind of organism through the endosymbiosis there. But it still wouldn't have really been immediate. It would have been a weird kind of symbiotic relationship before it became what you would call an obligate symbiote, which means neither one can live without the other. But yeah, but no, like Pachycetus never turned into Ambulocetus, right? I always use the language analogy. I've been using it for so many years that I'm almost sick of it, but it's the perfect analogy. Spanish speakers never woke up one day and started speaking Portuguese. That's not how the Portuguese language came about. Instead, and in reality, Portuguese and Spanish come from some sort of, I don't know what it would be, because I don't know anything about this, but like a proto-Spanish, proto-Iberian, I don't know what they call it, language. But anyways, it's not the case that one day people woke up and started saying a completely different language. Instead, literally fragments of words, generation by generation, change. But that accumulated change over many generations gets to the point where now this isolated group over here has a completely different vocabulary than the other group. Now, there's still going to be a lot of overlap. And with life on this planet, we share genes. There's overlap. The genetic and the linguistic analogy is just absolutely too perfect, because it also demonstrates that things change into new things, but never in a generation. It's a macroevolution is just the consequence of microevolution over vast periods of time.
So, yeah, so I think I understand that. But I guess, so the question that I have then is, so cats is obviously a bad example because they're around today, so they came from some other ancestor. I think I understand that. But if cats always remain cats, you know, or X always remains an X, even through the process of evolution,
mm-hmm.
then how does that you know, result in the vast amount of completely different speciation that we see. We see things that are completely... The things that evolved into whales didn't look at all like what a whale looks like, right?
Yeah, but it evolved into many different types of whales. I mean, the whales are all pretty similar. There's two big groups of them. There's the toothed whales, which includes dolphins, and the baleen whales that have they're the filter feeder type things. But if I can use the language analogy, I guess, to help, like Papua New Guinea there are more languages on that island than anywhere else in the world. I think there's like 4,000 languages or something like that. Now let me look that up because I want to know what it is. How many languages are spoken on Papua New Guinea? 800. I think the number of total languages on the planet is 4,000. So yeah, it's a little over 800. Now, did 800 different groups of people arrive on Papua New Guinea at different time periods, all speaking a different language? No. The exodus of people to New Guinea may have really only happened once. If it happened multiple times, which it could have, it would not have been a significantly large number of times. But those people are isolated from one another, and so their languages just diverge and become specialized, I guess you could say, but different enough, unique enough to be a completely different language. Now, it's weird with organisms because organisms have a phenotype. They have a body that is sculpted right by those genetics, but it's the same kind of thing in effect because it's the changes in the genes that cause that. So yeah, an Ambulocetus has ancestors that range from the Yangtze River dolphin, RIP, to the blue whale.
Okay, that was a four-legged land creature, right?
It would have spent a lot of time in the water, but yeah.
Oh, all right. So I think that the part that people have trouble with is saying that when these things, when we say that they evolved and that you started with a single cell organism and then over millions of years you got multicellular organisms and then millions more.
That took a few billion years, but yeah.
A few billion years, okay, all right. So if you say that you've got all of those, then that just seems like a heck of a lot of specialization and, successful adaptation, I guess I would say. So how good is evolution at creating complex solutions to environmental problems? Because we don't see...
Well, I would say there's actually kind of a little bit of a flaw in your question. Okay. it's generally accurate, except evolution's, what I would say is it's good enough. And you said there's been all this history of like successful adaptation or something. I don't remember exactly, but...
I don't remember exactly what I said either. Something like that. The
problem with the way you put it is the vast majority of all species have gone extinct. So evolution actually isn't so great. It's great at producing organisms to survive in the environment they find themselves in, but environments change. Like a big freaking asteroid can do that, you know? Then no organism is really adapted for that environment. Now, by luck, some of them make it through. So that's what I like. Evolution is good enough, essentially.
Okay. Because one thing we don't see today are like some percentage of the population walking around with beaks, right? We don't see, one out of 10,000 people are born with a beak, because, and if it turns out that beaks are really cool and whatever in the aftermath of the economic collapse that's coming, beaks are great, then, you know, those people would definitely be fitter. But we don't see those kinds of large scale changes. And I realize that we wouldn't necessarily expect to, but for something that's a four-legged, often water-dwelling animal, but capable of walking on land, to turn into a blue whale does seem like a pretty significant drift in terms of, like, it, you know.
It does.
Like, do we have intermediate forms for that work?
Intermediate, like, forms for that? Well, we do have, you know what, I can bring up my book again, actually, because my book has pretty good transitional fossils for whales in it.
Okay.
And what you can see is the one you begin with and the one you end with are radically different in appearance, but the in-betweens are actually very, very, there's huge similarities between them. So here, let me do this. Boom shakalaka. Is that I want to get this on recording here too.
Yep.
Okay. So these are the horse ones over here, but that's Ambulocetus right there. Here's its skull right here. So you can see it's kind of hard to tell, but the teeth it has in the back are
they're like pointy molars.
They look just like the one. Do you have a cat or a dog?
Yeah, I have a dog.
So you know how their molars are like a three-pointed thing?
Yeah.
So Ambulocetus has that, but there it's more than 3 points. It's kind of like a shovel that's serrated. You can see it on bottom here a lot more clearly, but this isn't Ambulocetus on the bottom. This is Bacillosaurus. But the skulls of those two are actually remarkably similar to each other. But this here on the top, labeled A, that's Bacillosaurus. So Bacillosaurus, like, nobody would mistake that for being anything other than a whale. It's an extinct whale, a very ancient one, but that's very clearly what it was. But it has the exact same tooth morphology and the same skull shape as Ambulocetus did. Now, another really significant thing are these legs here. So these are the legs of Bacillosaurus, the hind legs. These are the hind legs of Dorudon, which is the whale labeled B here. A much smaller one, but definitely a whale.
Okay.
So these are really significant because if you look at these legs, they look like walking legs, don't they?
Yes.
And that's because in Ambulocetus they were, but that changed because neither of these whales used these legs for locomotion. Now, if you look at the front flippers, or the front legs of a whale, what you find is the humerus, the upper arm bone, is really short and really thick. So is the radius and ulna. That's true with moles, too, because what both of them have in common is they...
Well, by the way, Blob wants to come back up, and we don't have any routes other than Dimock, so...
Sure. Now, the forelimbs become specialized because there's a very particular task that they're undergoing. What's really significant about the hind limbs of Bacillosaurus and Dorudon is the legs aren't under selective pressure for any kind of function. It's just to reduce in size so that the body has less drag, so that they're a more efficient swimmer. And in modern whales today, what's left of those hind limb bones doesn't even stick out of the body anymore. So,
okay, so I have questions. I have some questions about that.
Yep.
So at some point, the ambulatory one, the one with legs that could walk, gave birth to something that had fewer legs or smaller legs.
No, they would have just... Yeah, it would have just been, like, think of humans today. They have, like, proportionately, we're all different. So, like, for example, I used to be a track coach, and I had these two girls. They were phenomenal athletes. One was a hurdler, one was a high jumper. They did very different things. Kind of similar, but they're actually very different. What was so weird about them is they were the exact same height, but if they stood back to back with each other, you could see that the legs of the high jumper were many, many inches taller than my hurdler, which makes sense for a high jumper because you jump up and then you have to, you curl like over the bar, you contort over the bar in a weird way. And she went on to be like a phenomenal school record breaking high jumper. And the hurdler, she was a phenomenal volleyball player and hurdler. She was great too, but they were proportionately different. There's a really cool book about this kind of thing called The Sports Gene by David Epstein, I think his name is. And it talks about all these like weird sports things where like, you know, your proportions just make you way better at certain things or whatever. So with the ambulocetus, it would just be generation by generation. The ones with the slightly smaller hind limbs had a slightly better survival advantage in nature. So they were statistically more likely to reproduce. So statistically, every generation, we call that directional selection. It would have pushed the phenotypes to become more and more exaggerated, or actually in this case, less and less exaggerated. Well, it's technically more exaggerated, whatever.
The phenotype is how it looks. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you just cite Jeffrey Epstein?
No, I said David Epstein.
Okay.
Yeah, I think those are two very different people.
Just checking.